Hi, it's good to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Tope.
And we're really looking forward to having your company again throughout 2013. Well, I wonder as the year begins, whether you're like me and you like to reflect on what we'd like to do differently this year. I wonder if you've ever heard someone say they'd like to be more mindful. Well, mindfulness seems to be everywhere. It's all over the place these days. You hear it in psychology circles, but in business and in exercise routines, all sorts of things. And there's been some research that suggests that mindfulness might be effective when it comes to exercise and trying to lose weight and that sort of thing. I've also heard people say that mindfulness can be used in dementia care. In those situations, it's the idea that you're fully present for the person that you're with. And not trying to make any sort of demands on yourself or on others. We've got Lisa Aitken in the studio today. Lisa is a clinical psychologist based in Sydney. She has many years of experience in this field. She works primarily in counselling for a range of issues from depression and anxiety through to relationship problems, handling stress and anger and so on. She's been mindful about mindfulness for some time now, and it's great to have you in the studio, Lisa. Welcome.
Hi, pleasure.
Now, I want to get onto this topic. It seems to be all over the place at the moment. But first of all, what is mindfulness, and then where does it come from?
Mindfulness, the technical definition, is it's about paying attention on purpose in the present moment, and that's really important, but also non-judgmentally. So it is about being in the moment and slowing down. It's sort of the opposite of mindlessness. It's easy to do things mindlessly and be on automatic, but it's about focusing and slowing down.
And we're hearing about this in all sorts of different circles. It pops up in business and exercise training and whatever else. What's the source of this idea?
Well, it's interesting. It's really unusual in the world of psychology to have a concept that is actually plucked straight out of a religion. Very unusual. So it's actually step 7 of the Eightfold Way of Buddhism.
So Lisa, I want to ask you about the Buddhist aspects of mindfulness, but how about we wait until a little bit later in the program. Can you walk us through the kinds of benefits that mindfulness has for individuals who practice it?
There are many and varied benefits. As I said, mindfulness is, especially if you're being mindful of your thoughts and your feelings, the benefits in the world of psychology are certainly for people who are struggling with depression or anxiety or stress. If you can learn to be aware of your thinking, and especially any unhelpful thinking, so for example, if you're depressed and you've got some really negative thoughts going on, you're anxious and you're worried about the future, mindfulness gives you some skills in the training of it to detach a little bit from those thoughts. And to be able to just notice them and let them go and not have them be so overwhelming. So in the world of depression and anxiety therapy and stress as well, so there's mindfulness-based stress reduction. For example, there's mindfulness-based cognitive behavioural therapy. And in mindfulness-based CBT, for example, it's been shown to halve relapse rates for depression when you add mindfulness to normal CBT. It also improves your immune system. It lowers your cortisol levels. If you do brain imaging of people who regularly practice mindfulness, you can see differences. The left prefrontal cortex, which is a part of your brain that's associated with feeling good, basically, gets more activated. So there's physiological benefits. There's certainly benefits for people struggling with mental ill health. But really for anyone, if you think about it, just slowing down and learning to focus on the moment, learning to enjoy the moment, has to be good.
Well, someone who practices mindfulness is our producer's wife, Heather Clark. We asked her about the benefits this brings to her life.
I practice mindfulness using an app on my smartphone, and I've tried different apps and I've found one that works really well for me. So I pop my headphones in, pop into the bedroom and practice meditation and particularly mindfulness. And the benefits are probably more to do with my mental state after a busy day with kids or work and the chaos of juggling a whole lot of different timetables. I find I get quite distracted and I jump from job to job and my mind just gets really busy, I suppose. And mindfulness causes me to slow down, to concentrate on one thing, whether it be my breathing or the sounds I'm listening to, or how my body's feeling, and just to accept that and be with that and to be really present in the moment. And I just find that calms everything, declutters my headspace, and works well.
So Lisa, there are some obvious benefits to this. Are there any things about mindfulness that you have reservations about?
There are, in that it originally came in Buddhist packaging. It is part of Buddhism. And for those of us who aren't Buddhists, I think we do need to stop and think, which are the aspects of mindfulness, what are the reasons that it actually works in terms of for psychological therapies or for improving well-being? And do we need to unpackage some of the Buddhist assumptions about life, about the meaning of life, about its role in mindfulness's role in that? And so, for example, I'll just explain a little bit more about how it fits in Buddhism. Mindfulness is about detaching, in a sense, from the world. Suffering is seen in Buddhism as coming through when we attach to the world. And so in mindfulness, because you're really distancing yourself even from your own thinking, in a sense, and just noticing and suspending any sort of judgment, there is that sense of detachment that comes. In Buddhism, there is no self, and so the path to spiritual enlightenment, and I know there's many different types of Buddhism, but in general, the path to spiritual enlightenment is about just experiencing the world directly.
Hey Lisa, can I just jump in there? Like, what happens if someone doesn't have a Buddhist worldview? Does that affect how they do mindfulness, or do they want to do all of it in all of its fullness, in its Buddhist fullness, if I can put it in those terms?
Yeah, that's a really good question. In fact, I was just in the UK recently and we had a whole day of a bunch of Christian psychologists sitting down and spending a day discussing this, where if you're a Christian, if you're anything that's not a Buddhist, what do you do with mindfulness? So there are some, I think you have to be discerning. You have to be discerning when you read books about mindfulness, because the Buddhism sort of seeps in and it's hard to disentangle if you haven't thought it through. So for example, for me as a Christian, I practice mindfulness, I find it really helpful. But when, for example, I'm being mindful of my own breath and slowing down and focusing, I can't help but thank God for the fact that I have breath or the fact that I have food. There's a relational element that comes in. Interestingly, in an Eastern Christian tradition rather than a Western, in the sort of more the Greek Orthodox or the Eastern monastic contemplative traditions within Christianity, there's very similar practices to mindfulness, but they're different in the sense that there's a sense of stilling and slowing down in order to then relate to God.
Ron Brookman is a senior pastor of a church in Sydney and regularly runs retreats which teach contemplative prayer.
Be still and know that I am God. Physical stillness slows us down just to be, and in turn it stills our heart and our mind. Stillness in time keeps us in the present moment. We let go of the past and its regrets and guilt. We let go of the future, its fears, anxieties and dreams, to meet God in the now. The present requires simple trust. Letting go.
Well, that's Ron Brookman introducing the age-old practice of contemplative or centering prayer.
I don't see the need to utterly detach from the world to follow a spiritual path, rather to be engaged in God's will, that I'm a fellow creature in his creation and can stay
right.
Focused.
That's a big difference, isn't it? Because Christianity is really about engaging with the world. It's a fully sort of orbed physical life. Mm. There's not a sense like you get in Buddhism of sort of detaching from this illusory, ephemeral existence.
Definitely, it's a really big difference. And so it means that how you do mindfulness is different, and it has a different purpose. So if I'm slowing down, if I've noticed I've got some unhelpful thinking and I think I'm just going to be mindful about, I don't know, a tree that I'm walking past because I'm on a walk, then there is a sense of wanting to, as I say, thank God for this tree, to engage in this fellow created thing here.
Okay, if you've just joined us, we're talking with Lisa Aitken about the practice of mindfulness and its origins, what it does, how its use in psychology, but also how it might be useful for us today. Now, Lisa, I want to ask you about the work of a guy called Joseph Piper. He's written this famous thing, book called Leisure, The Basis of Culture. And he says that leisure is not simply not doing work, but is an attitude of mind or soul that enables us to contemplate and to enjoy things as they are in themselves. So there's a lot of crossover, it seems, with mindfulness. Yes. Now, he also suggests that leisure and mindfulness helps us to live more fully because it gives us the time and space to think about the big questions of life. You know, where did I come from? Where am I going? Who am I? Do you find that that's the case with mindfulness as well?
To a point. I think that often, because I use it mainly with people who are struggling with depression and anxiety, so it's often more of a tool to manage emotions and to manage self-talk. But one of the comments that we made in the conference in the UK that I was at was that its appeal, and part perhaps of why it's become so popular, is our life is so frenetic and so busy and we don't have that time to slow down, whether it's slow down and enjoy or slow down and ponder those big questions, as you say. And so it's a very timely thing in the busyness of life to have an encouragement to slow down and to think.
Is that linked to this idea of rest, not just resting from your work, but sort of an active engagement in the things other than work and routine?
I think mindfulness can transform both work and rest, in that if you're being truly in the present moment in your work, you will do it a bit differently. You won't be distracted by your thoughts. And similarly, in your rest, you will actually find it far more restful to fully engage in the moment in whatever you're doing in your leisure time. And there is that emphasis on, you know, part of the Sabbath is about not doing but being. And mindfulness picks up that resonance of just being rather than always doing.
Can you walk us through just a couple of tips, perhaps, that if someone wanted to practice this in their daily life, you know, how could they go about doing that?
Probably the most commonly used part is mindfulness of the breath, which is where you slow down and all you're doing is a space, it might only be 5-10 minutes a day, where you notice your breathing, you notice how your body changes as you breathe, and when a thought pops in about, but I haven't had lunch yet, or whatever it is, that you let that thought go and you bring your focus back to the breath. And that's a bit like going to the gym. It's just the basic training of learning to keep your focus there. There's a great book by a man called Jon Kabat-Zinn called Full Catastrophe Living, and that goes through his mindfulness-based stress reduction course. He is a Buddhist, so you'll have to be discerning as you go through it, but there's a lot of really practical, great ideas there on how you might do mindfulness in daily life.
And one final question, Lisa. What then might be a way of describing a distinctly Christian mindfulness?
I think the relational aspect is key, as I've mentioned, that you are slowing down but with an awareness of the presence of God. And probably another really important point is that while the present moment is important and Jesus tells us not to worry about tomorrow and we have those lovely encouragements in, say, Ecclesiastes of just that everything has its proper time and place and we have to accept the flow of life that we're in, to only be in the present all the time is there's more to life than that. And as a Christian, I look to the past. I look to whether it's especially Jesus coming, whether it's the whole history of God through time, and that is part of who I am and my thinking about the world. And I also look to the future in the knowledge that there's God is preparing, has a plan prepared for the earth, for me, for humanity, and that there's hope in that. And there's times when being in the present and simply accepting the pain and the struggle of life, while that can be helpful, I feel as a Christian there's a whole another richer layer of hope that I can accept the present, but actually deep down welling up in me there's a hope that God can use whatever the struggle is, and there's a hope for my future and for the future of the people I'm working with.
Well, that's a lovely sort of vision to finish on, Lisa, there. So we've been talking mindfulness. Great to get your thoughts on it. Thanks so much for coming in, Lisa.
Pleasure.